Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today we're excited to welcome back Michael Solomon and Rishon Bloomberg. Michael and Rishon are the co-founders of 10X Management, a first of its kind talent agency that matches cream of the crop tech talent, and co-authors of the new book, Game Changer, How to Be 10X in the Talent Economy. In 2019, they co-founded 10X Ascend, a senior tech talent compensation negotiation service. The two also oversee the respective talent management entertainment consulting company, Brick Wall Management, whose clients include multi-platinum and Grammy award-winning recording artists, songwriters, top record producers, and filmmakers. Michael is a recognized expert on the freelance economy and its growing impact on business and has appeared on numerous media outlets like CNBC and BBC. He is a co-founder of the nonprofit organization Musicians on Call, which is dedicated to bringing the healing power of music to bedsides of patients at hospitals and nursing homes. That's cool. Rishon graduated from the Wharton School of Business with a degree in entrepreneurial management in 1994. He was presented at TEDx, been published in HBR, and was featured on the cover of Wharton Alumni of New York Magazine. Their website is 10xmanagement.com and 10xascend.com. You can reach them on Twitter at Michael Solomon X, and that's O-N at the end of Solomon, and Rishon Bloomberg, that's R-I-S-H-O-N B-L-U-M-B-E-R-G. So as I always do, we've done this for 15 years, always ask the guests and you about your personal journeys. I read your bios, but you could just do a quick couple minutes on something personal about your background that's led you to this place.
Sure.
Rishon, would you start?
So what is unique about what got me here? I actually think that both Michael and I have a probably somewhat of a similar answer to that. And that has to do with the fact that growing up in New York City in the 70s and 80s when we did, we were surrounded by people whose parents were in the music business. And I think that gave us, at least it gave me, a unique glimpse into a side of a business that you don't typically see. You know, sure, we're huge music fans. I think everybody on this call, this video, would describe themselves as a music fan. But the added benefit that we got is that we loved music, but also had, for example, a friend whose father was the largest concert promoter in New York City, a legendary guy. And so we just knew that that was a business, right? So, you know, normally you just think, oh, I go to the concert, but you don't think about the business behind it.
Right.
I think that woke us up to the reality of, oh, this person's father, his business is putting on concerts. And our other friend, this person's mother is a co-manager of a huge artist. So there's like a whole business there. We had another friend whose father was a huge entertainment lawyer. So that really, I think, gave us the insight into this as a potential avenue for employment. And then when I went to college, I was doing all the concerts starting in my at the end of my freshman year. For the 4 years I was there, I ran the concert committee. And the company that we had hired to help us negotiate the deals with the artist's agent is whom I started working for after I graduated school. So I think that really the key for me was being exposed to things behind the scenes that I wouldn't otherwise have been exposed to.
Right. That's great. That's great. Michael, how about you? Anything to add to that?
I would just add that since we're doing personal journey, I'll add a little triumph or a little tragedy to our triumphant story, which sort of ties in directly to that. When I was 23, I had a very serious girlfriend of 4 years who died of a rare tumor, a sarcoma. And her parents were both in the music industry, and that was definitely a big part of what got us started in that direction. And her mom is actually interviewed in Game Changer, as is her mom's partner, about what it's like managing Bruce Springsteen. And in a lot of ways, they were sort of our entree into artist management in particular, and gave us a glimmer of what, you know, Bruce in a lot of ways was the first 10Xer we saw in that context, and they were the first 10X managers we saw. So it sort of goes back to that. But the other thing that I would add about that experience was at age 23, that's not usually when people are discovering that they have mortality and they're going to, to live a very conscious life. And I think that that really influenced me a lot in terms of the nonprofit stuff that I wanted to do. And that was, you know, pre-B Corps, before you could combine your good work and your making money into one thing. So we did that. I did them separately much more than I would have if I were doing it all over again.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Sorry that happened. But I can see how that totally shaped you. That's cool. So let's talk about 10X. So what do you, when you talk about this idea of 10X, this concept, so talk with us a little bit about that and about how you came to that. I mean, obviously having an example of Bruce Springsteen is a good one, but I want to hear more about that. I think, Rishaun, why don't you go ahead and do that? And then we are going to spend some time on, you know, what is it like to be doing talent management in pandemic? I mean, that's certainly, and the stress of that. I mean, that's sort of the theme that we've had. We picked stress management as a theme in January, actually in November of last year, and didn't know we would be under this much stress. Who knew? Yeah.
It's your fault.
Yeah. So we are going to get to that, but I wanted to get kind of a general idea of what you mean by 10X and what that means for your business. Yeah.
So I'm actually going to start with the, how we sort of came about to the name first. And yes, Bruce, I agree with Michael. Bruce was certainly the first 10Xer we saw up close and personal. Not that we knew what 10X was or had thought of that concept at that point, or even classify somebody as in that way. But when we first started our company, before it was sort of formally off the ground, the first person that we represented was a Harvard grad who was a musician as well. And he was basically coding to pay for his musician lifestyle. Yeah. And he kind of introduced us to the concept of a 10X programmer. The 10X that we were familiar with prior to that was more of like a business valuation, you know, 10 times earnings or something along those lines. And so when we heard that as a concept, I think all of us at the same time, including this client who ultimately became our initial partner in 10X management, were like, huh, that's a cool concept. And wouldn't that be a cool company name? So that was sort of how we came about to calling the company 10X. But to give you an example of what a 10Xer is, I'll use sort of the overarching concept, which is very high IQ mixed with a very high EQ. So somebody who's very smart and also very capable of connecting, understands empathy, feels empathy, understands communication and the importance of communication. So that's the overarching sort of, that is a 10Xer. But the qualities of a 10Xer are insatiable curiosity, constant learning, the desire to connect and clarify and interact with people on a human level. What we don't mean is, and we use technology in the book in particular, and obviously 10X management is within the tech sphere, but we use technology as the backdrop. So what we're not talking about is somebody who is exceptionally brilliant, but sort of has no communication skills. You know, the guy who's got, or the girl who's got the hoodie over their head, they're locked in, they're writing great code, but they have no way of talking or interacting with the team, either below them, above them, adjacent to them. That is not a true 10Xer. So it's a little bit of a target that's tough to hit, because there aren't that many people that are true 10Xers. But it's also, and we talk about this in detail in the book, it's a little bit aspirational, where if you are pushing yourself towards that 10Xness, it means you are trying to improve yourself intellectually, trying to communicate and connect with people more and improve your EQ. And that's really holistically what a 10Xer is.
So in the book, your book's about how do you become a 10Xer? And as you said, it's aspirational. So Michael, what are some of the things that you see of certainly EQ and IQ, but what are you referring to in the book that helps folks get there?
So the book is essentially in two halves. The first half of the book is how do you manage 10Xers? And it sort of explains what they are and gets into, you know, more detail of what Rishaun talked about. And then the second half of the book is how do you become more 10X yourself? And I think, you know, to answer, if I understood the question correctly, I think the way that we all become more 10X is we look at some of the qualities that we think of as being 10X, and then we figure out how can we augment those or optimize those in ourselves. So one of the qualities we talk about is feedback. You need to be open to outside feedback, because other people see things about you that you don't see in yourself. That's easier said than done. Like there are a lot of, there are a lot of people.
No one's going to argue with that.
Right. There are a lot of people who approach that kind of feedback with defensiveness rather than curiosity. So the one of the first lessons is take all that feedback and approach it with curiosity. Doesn't mean you have to think it's true. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everything it's said. You just have to approach it not with defensiveness, but like, maybe I do that. I personally got some feedback last week that was brutally harsh from somebody I barely knew. And I had asked for it. It was solicited, but I couldn't believe how direct it was. And I had to sit with that for a little while and just say, I may not think this is how I come off to most people, but clearly this one person, data set of one, this is how I left them with an impression about me. So I would say that's a really, really big one. Lifelong learning. So constantly, you never being content with where you are. You're always driving to make yourself better. If you optimized yourself, and this is a well-known example, if you optimized yourself 1% per week, not even per day, like how much better would you be over time? And if you have that mindset, that growth mindset, you're always going to be getting better and better and better. And that, those sound really simple, but the reality is most people don't do that. They're not looking at where can I improve? What can I learn? How do I do this? Our 10X clients, the tech talent we represent, regularly reach out to us and say, what should I learn next? What's popular? What's most in demand? So I think thinking in those kinds of ways will really change somebody's internal state, and ultimately it changed their external state.
So today I cobbled together two client calls with the internet here, and it worked. We got it figured out. Anyway, in both cases, we were talking a lot about process. So that EQ. You mentioned like they're coming to you and it's about feedback, and then you said that, that a lot of people aren't focused on that. How do you get them to focus on it? How do you get them to look at the what's on the side, or what's in between the lines, or things that aren't the content that is what they're good at, right? It's the things in between. How do you get them to do that or suggest to them?
I think the first thing is, part of what we're doing is we're screening out people who don't have the capacity for this. We talk about this management continuum in the book, which ranges from the success impulse, which is really what a 10Xer has, to the sabotage impulse. And the sabotage impulse, we've all met these people. They can't get out of their own way. When faced with criticism or feedback, they're instantly defensive, throwing blame in every direction.
Yes.
What we joke about calling a blame thrower. And not only do you not want to work with people like that because they're impossible, but they don't have the capacity to improve because they can't recognize that there's room for improvement. And they create a culture where everybody's ducking and covering because you don't know what's coming at you from that person. So the first part is not necessarily even improving it. It's like, let's make sure that we get people on the team.
The mental model, yeah.
Right, who have the capacity. They don't have to be 10Xers. They just have to be open to becoming 10X.
So let's talk about the pandemic. I imagine that there's, you're talking about the blame game. I think it's been difficult for all of us. And I don't think that sort of burying the fact that we're sad or in grief or, bummed out or whatever, helps. I mean, we have to accept that some of this is the way it is. So what do you suggest to people as they're coming to you? What are you seeing? So I'll just, Rashawn, you can answer this. What are you seeing as far as how the pandemic has affected high flying talent? Like, it's either someone on the way to being a 10Xer or they are a 10Xer, in terms of how they've dealt with this?
Well, I can tell you our personal experience, mainly because we're dealing with freelance talent, people who have been working primarily remotely, for the length of their duration that they're with us. We have not seen that much of a shift in the way that they operate. In a lot of ways, part of the reason we wrote this book and a lot of the sort of marketing stuff that we have done over the last 10 years is about convincing companies how important it is to allow or be available to remote work. So I think internally, it's actually been fairly seamless. What we've seen with our own staff is that well, I don't even know if we've seen it. We've felt that we've needed to do this with our own staff for our own purposes, is that we have to be more intentional about finding times to connect with people that are not specific to a piece of work or a work item or a work Zoom or whatever it is we're doing for work, but just find time to connect either about how their day is, what their plans are for the week, right, how their weekend was. We've got, I believe, two different afternoons where there's meditation that people can join into. So I do think that there is this intentionality that has to happen in times like this, where it's really not enough to just let things operate as they were, because you don't have the same connections. We've offered up, people can buy a certain amount of snacks per week that we'll reimburse them for at their house. You know, we're trying to make the situation a little less fraught with isolation wherever possible.
Yes.
We've started to, you're in Hawaii, so you're clearly not going into your office, but like we've started to, we've created, and employees are starting to come into offices in the office on a schedule. So, you know, I think that things have leveled off. I think people understand where we are right now and the way that they can best deal with it. And we offer a lot of flexibility. And I think that's really the key. It's communication, which is the key to all of the things we do. It's over-communication and the intentionality of it. It's finding ways to connect with people that aren't just work-related. And it's understanding that we all have to be more flexible in what people can and cannot do and when they can and cannot do it. So it's been an interesting mix of almost functioning exactly the same as we normally had with our engagements and our clients, changing things a little bit with our staff to make things more intentional. And then there's been a total different mindset as far as sort of how we market our business, like a peacetime, wartime kind of mindset, which I don't know that we need to go into here, but from a human element, from a how do people get through this and deal with this on a professional level, it has been, thankfully, I'm knocking on wood, fairly painless for us so far.
Okay. Michael, you want to have anything to add to that? I have a few more questions about what
The only thing I would add is it has been fairly painless so far. And I think we've been very proactive about watching out for our people, and the human element, as Roshan got to, is the most important part of this right now. But we're also at the very beginning of sort of the mental health issues.
Yes.
I think that we're going to have to work harder and redouble our efforts to make sure everybody stays as we get into winter and you can't go out as much. And it's more isolating that we just sort of really keep close tabs on everybody and take care of each other.
We'll send people to visit Sue in Hawaii.
Hey, there is some method to my madness here.
Yes,
for sure.
That works.
So you're saying it as if it's sort of everyone. I mean, you're saying it so as a matter of fact that, which I think is wonderful, that people, a lot of people do this. I don't think that's the case necessarily. So I want to know from you, how did you decide, or how did you know, have the judgment to be more so intentional? Like, how did you decide that together to do that? Because I think that is right, that being more intentional and checking in on people more of the time, now focusing on mental health and the isolation, we're finding that is extremely prevalent. But how did you know to do that?
I think if you really get to the core of the book, what we explain is 10Xers are not cogs in the machine. They're not willing to be treated like cogs in the machine because they don't have to be. And you need to treat them like a human who has an individual set of life circumstances and desires. And the more you can focus your job offer to that and how you manage somebody to their particular situation, I think the first chapter is called The Bespoke Boss. Like, you really have to, I mean, we have personalized medicine, we have personalized playlists, movies get recommended, products get recommended. Nobody thinks of work that way. And that's really at the core of what we talk about in the book. So this was a natural evolution to just be very human centric, because if you want people to stay with you, and I'll just add one more piece to this, which is millennials and Gen Z are very much like 10Xers in that they don't want to be treated like cogs in the machine. They want to know that you care about them and their future. And while the book isn't about them, almost everything that we wrote is very applicable to them, and we do get into that a little bit. And I think that this is so crucial for managing human beings, because remembering they're human beings. Start there. They're not, yeah. You know, believe me, we're going to have AI and automation in 3 seconds doing most jobs. You can manage those things like machines. The people, you still need to manage like they're human beings.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's a very great analogy. Like everything, you know, Netflix personalized, everything's personalized. So why wouldn't we do our work and bespoke? I like the idea of bespoke, totally customizations. That's great. I think I want to go into this whole idea of uncertainty, because I think that I don't think things are as uncertain as they were 4 months ago or 5 months ago. I think people have accepted that we're going to be in this for a while. Would you say that's true?
Yeah.
Or no?
Yes.
Different.
That's true.
I think that's definitely true. I think there's new uncertainty about how long, about what the second phase is going to be like. There's certainly, which is a little bit of a different topic, but feels right, real super related, is what's going to happen with the election. And I don't mean about who wins, but how much unrest there may be in the transition of power. So I think there's still a lot of anxiety in the world and for people in the workplace.
Okay, so let's talk about some of that anxiety. Even though we know that, like, I know a lot of companies, I don't know if you guys are saying, but like, I know someone said they're not going back until July 2021, and there'll be no question about that, so don't worry about it. Some people aren't going back at all. Some people are going back January. I mean, so do you guys have one of those dates?
We've basically posted a schedule where people can come in, at, you know, according to that schedule anytime they want. And right. So far, about 25% of our employees are starting to do that. But we're certainly not pushing it. We don't have any formal plans of like, this is when you must be in the office. We're staying flexible. The beauty about what we do, thankfully, is that we can do it fully remote. You know, with some minor annoyances here or there, like the mail forwarding, things like that are not perfect, but you know, everything can be done from afar, and we're fine with that. So from our standpoint, we're taking a very laissez-faire approach to it. We'll see what happens. We'll see how things progress. Is there, you know, a vaccine? What's the adoption of the vaccine? How comfortable do people feel? You know, all things being equal, if let's say by next summer, we're showing that essentially COVID is under control and you can travel without problem. And when I say travel, I mean cab, bus, subway, bike, walk, whatever, plane, whatever it is, safely and comfortably. Yeah, probably at that point we'll say, all right, let's all get back to work in the right. office now. But barring that, I think we'll be pretty flexible.
And our team was permitted to work remotely before. It wasn't like right. work it, remotely those, indefinitely, yeah. but it was certainly, you know, flexible and easy, and we'll stay with that.
Sure. But you know what, there's a huge difference between being able to be remote whenever you want and having to be remote because you have no choice. So I'm finding personally that I don't love the fact that I have to work remotely essentially all the time. I'd much rather be in the office, even if it's half time.
Right.
You know, so for me, you know, it's not a great situation, but it's a flexible situation where people can do what they feel is most comfortable for themselves.
So, but you had mentioned, Michael, about the anxiety. And so I do want to talk about that because I'm curious on two fronts. We can continue to talk about your team and how, you know, things you're dealing with that. You just mentioned like, okay, there's some mental health issues we need to look at. Obviously, anxiety is part of that. But I also want you to talk as if you're the guidance you're giving the 10Xers that you're working with. As far as how they're dealing with their own anxiety and based on the fact that there's definitely uncertainty no matter how you cut this, and maybe a little less uncertainty than there was 4 months ago, but then there's other uncertainty that you just mentioned. So there's going to be uncertainty and anxiety for a while.
Yeah.
So I mean, how are you handling that with your folks?
I think we're treating that like the way that most good business people deal with anything. We're trying to set some reasonable expectations that are based on the data that's available, that are not set in stone, and that can be amended. So when the virus started, we had some communication to our clients saying there's going to be a hit in the number of engagements, and there's going to be a hit to pricing. So if you want to keep working, be ready for the fact that you may be working for less per hour than you were before.
Right.
And if you don't care about that, then turn stuff down. But if you do, just know there's going to be price suppression as a result of this. And I think that just by giving them a little bit of sort of what we were seeing in the very early days of this, it created, I believe it alleviated some anxiety. Mm-hmm. For the most part, these are also people, and this is the luxury that they have, that get, you know, 20 recruiter emails a week. So if they just, they choose to freelance, it's not like they can't find a job. So they know that if they need to flip the switch and go inside at a company, there's endless jobs for them. And that's one of the benefits of being a 10Xer, is you have a lot of choices. So I don't think that their anxiety went through the roof about where's my next gig going to come from. I think it was more about what the heck is happening with the world, what's happening with our country, what's happening with social unrest, and where does this all sort of play out, and the economy as well.
You know, one of the interesting things about the situation we're in right now, which is totally unique to all of us on this call and anybody who we've ever known in our lifetime, because we've never lived through a pandemic like this, is that for the first time ever, everybody across the globe is in the same boat to varying degrees. So while I agree that there's anxiety, there are mental health issues, there's a lot of uncertainty, what there isn't is a disparity of reality, meaning that if you are working with a company, they're going through the same thing that you're going through. So I do think that across the board, people are giving people a lot more flexibility. What we put forth in our book is a little bit of a utopian scenario. You know, we talk about soliciting feedback from people above you, providing feedback to people adjacent to you, and then giving sort of leadership and mentorship to people below you. And if we apply that same sort of utopian concept to where we are right now, I think one of the ways that people alleviate the stress and the anxiety is by seeking out that guidance, that feedback, providing feedback to others, letting their managers know what is unique about their situation and what extra flexibility they might need, asking their coworkers how they're doing, asking people below them how they're doing. You know, it is one of those unique scenarios where we're all in the same boat together.
And so there's a lot of Can I just throw something out there?
Yeah, go ahead.
About that. Cool. I heard a great, I'm not sure who I heard it from, but I heard a great way of saying, instead of saying we're in the same boat, we're in the same storm.
But yes.
Lots of people have different boats. Yes. Some people are in yachts. Some people are, you know, clinging to a piece of wood. And I love that. I wish I remembered who it was so I could credit them.
But, yeah, I've heard that one too, because we are definitely having different experiences. I mean, there's unfortunately disparities amongst people of color and that are, you know, so I think people are having a lot of very different experiences for sure. I want to pick up on this idea because I think there's something here around, because you both of you have said that both in your company and the people that you're working with, that because they'd already been, you know, many of them have been remote, and because they're used to, especially your clients are used to being freelancers, that this being thrown at them is another issue to deal with, but they're kind of used to having to deal with and be flexible. You have to be agile. So are there things about that, that one who is agile like that, are there lessons or a couple lessons that would be helpful to people that are inside, that are a little bit more anxious around their, about, you know, keeping their jobs? Are there any lessons you could provide in that way, in that regard?
I think that the main thing I would say as it relates there, and again, this is a basic business principle, but it's even more true when you work remotely, is over communicate. And Rashaan and I have had this because we're business partners of 25 years, because there's two of us running the ship. We have always had to over communicate, and that made it easy. And we're big believers in that.
But used to it.
I think that for employers who are used to watching somebody sit there and type at their keyboard and see the work happening, you may need to be a little bit more in their face to show them that the work is happening. At the end of the day, for the people that we represent and the remote workforce, this is a very, very positive experience. We used to have to sell, I mean, companies would come to us and say, I want the best person you have in the Bay Area. And it was like, okay, what if the best person we have for you is in Toronto? I don't want them. I want the best one in the Bay Area. All right, we'll give you what you want, but why not take the best person? That is going away. Like, people are
gonna be
much more comfortable with that.
We'll take the Toronto dude.
Rish, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, I think it's a great question, and I think it's a complex one to answer. I don't know that there are, for me, any immediate takeaways that people who are in full-time positions can learn from people that have been freelancing remotely. I will say that I think that the remote freelance experience has changed a little too, because a lot of people, you know, usually work from home when their spouse is at their office or their mm-hmm. kids are at school. So all of a sudden, everybody's kind of together, which mm-hmm. I think is unique and makes it a little bit more challenging. And nobody wants to go to like a co-working space, because the whole point is to be away from other people for the most part and stay with your pod. So I think that, again, we're all in the same storm in different boats, and we kind of all have to ride this out to see where it goes. I mean, you know, we talked about the tech side of our business, but we have this entertainment side where we're working mm-hmm. with musicians and creatives and they have really, you know, that whole industry is completely upended and there truly is no end in sight for that. I mean, maybe middle of 2021, early 2022, touring and large scale concerts can come back, but that is a huge question mark. So there are still so many unknowns at this point that it's really, I think it's providing huge challenges, mental health challenges for sure, fiscal challenges. You know, finding your zen is getting harder and harder until we ride this out.
Okay. So I want to talk about the book some more here. I've got some questions about the book. You talk about flow state and why it's so integral to create an environment where we can become optimally productive. So I want to talk about flow state, and I want to talk about double hat. So those are the two things I want to address.
I'll start with flow state for 500, please. And I'll answer in the form of a question.
1,000.
You know, but between our two different types of clients, our musician clients and our coding clients, the similarity that we've observed is that they tend to work in off hours. Isolation is very, very helpful for them in being able to get their mind free and clear of other clutter. Mm-hmm. And then once they're in this sort of state where they can hyper-focus on something, distractions are gone. Maybe everybody's asleep. Maybe they're just in a place that's isolated from everybody else. You can really focus on what you're working on in a way that you can't if you're, say, in an office. And so in particular with coding, but I think it's true of anything where you have to be creative or inventive, you know, it's really crucial not to be tapped on the shoulder every 10 minutes or picking up phone calls every 10 minutes or being called into meetings unnecessarily. And so we really are advocates for, not for every job, but for jobs that are creative and require this kind of independent thought. Either as a small pod working together, you need to be isolated and have the time to just get into that flow state. Or as an individual, you need to find ways to get into that flow state. And that we sort of came to that through some data and some reading, but also through seeing our freelance talent conveying to us, like, because one of the things we ask of our talent is that they have to be available on the work hours of whatever company they're working with. So if you have somebody in Toronto, they're going to be on the hours of somebody in California if they're working with a California company. And they would come back to us and say, that's fine. Like, I can do calls, I can do, you know, stand-ups or whatever. But if I'm developing, I may want to develop from like 9 to 3 in the morning. Like, that may be the time where I write my best code. And we've obviously observed it in the music business. So I think that's really the basis for this concept of flow state being so important in these verticals.
That makes a lot of sense. And so how much do you spend in terms of time with helping them develop that? Like, I mean, you have it in terms of talking about it, but like, are you coaching them on that? Are you listening to them talk about how they're getting interrupted? I mean, how far down the river do you go with them on that?
I think that really depends on the circumstance. There are times clients come to us and they're bringing this up as a problem, in which case we're going to work with them. We might even intervene with the company. It depends on the circumstances. Where, and it's really a win-win because the company wants this person's best, fastest work, right? So it's not like the company is opposed to this idea. They may not know about the value of giving the person some uninterrupted time. So sometimes right. there's an education process that we can do where we can advise them how to do it themselves. And then there are companies that don't care. Like there's a lot of companies where the culture is meetings every 10 minutes, regardless of who needs to be in it, how often. I mean, I've read that Elon Musk said, if you think there's something more important to be doing than in the meeting you're in, get up and walk out. You don't have to explain yourself, just go. And I think that's, you know, a pretty strong message to be sent about like people using the time for the best, you know, for their right. best purposes, for the gain of the company.
But that's a great example of top-down messaging, which is crucial in corporate environments. If it's not coming from the top, it's harder to make change and impact. So that's a great example of a guy who really understands what his people should be doing and how it should be done. And so he makes a comment and that trickles down.
I had a client who has since retired, but I think, you know, people ask me like, what should we do, you know, in terms of trying to organize our day and all that kind of stuff for our teams. And he's got a lot of coders, a lot of creatives. And so he instituted like pretty much week one of COVID that that meetings can only occur from 9 to 12 and 2 to 5, period. And I have to say that of all the advice I've heard anyone give anyone, this is the one that still comes to the top for me, because he instituted that from the top. And he basically took away any stress that parents, especially, he was very concerned about parents, he's a parent too, but that, you know, they need the time, especially now they do, now that kids are officially in school. Before it was kind of like, wasn't much going on, but as much, but now it's very official. That the parents could have that 12 to 2 time to themselves, to with their kids, go work out themselves or whatever. So I really like what you said about from the top, because sometimes like we need to send edicts, and if there are edicts that are positive like that, then, you know, I'm all for edicts.
Well, and there's also this element of the new workplace culture, the place where we're going was developed by tech companies for the most part, because these are people who believe in data and science more than they believe in anything else. So you take the old school boss who goes from their gut, and they're like, I don't want people taking time out of work to go to the gym. That's terrible. They should be working. I don't want to make time for that. And then you had the Google founders who were like, we're putting nap pods in the office because human beings don't work well when they're tired. And we'd rather have them go take a nap and come back to work awake and doing good work, or give them a gym on campus so that they can, you know, because that's also good for them. So you have this transition that's going on that is born, you know, primarily out of science. And yes, they wanted ping pong tables to attract the right people. And there were other things that were not quite as science driven, but ultimately you have all of this data driven change that makes sense, because we're machines. We can be optimized when handled properly. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you still have the people who are like, I need to see the work happening to know what's getting done. Well, okay. Yeah. Then you're going to have, you know, not the best people doing it, because the best people doing it want to do it where and when they want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. So talk about double hat. What's that concept about? Who wants to do that?
So essentially, as I explained, the first half of the book is how do you manage this great talent? How do you attract them? Yeah. How do you make offers for them? How do you get them in the door? And then the second part is how do you make yourself more 10X? And the whole double hat concept is essentially that even if you're a manager and your whole job is managing these other people, you still need to take time to stop and make yourself a better manager. And that's the double hat world, is like, how do I take care of myself? And how do I get better, which requires, by the way, that I have to talk to the people up the ladder and get my feedback. It's not just about me giving feedback to the people on my team. Mm-hmm. But I have to give and get feedback in the other direction. And the whole idea here is that you create this symbiotic relationship that you're at the center of, which is like, I need to be getting and I need to be giving. I need to be taking and giving. I need to be.
And, I like it.
And what you end up with is a much better rounded person. So we have concepts right. like future vision, which is basically like our advisor is very good at looking around the corner and saying what's coming next that we're not always seeing. We do the same thing for our clients. And you want to have this continuous feedback loop and this cycle of improvement and this cycle of continuous vision from all sides of you to allow for the continued growth.
Sounds good. Michelle, last comments about that or anything else?
No, I mean, I think it's really this idea that you're both talent and management at some point in your life. And some point in the given day, you've got a CTO who's maybe writing code 1 minute and then managing others the next minute. And if you can walk a mile in each of those shoes, you're going to have a more well-rounded experience and be a better leader, provider, contributor, and team member. That's really
person, it. A better person.
Yeah, cool. You guys have been great. I've really appreciated all the examples. And I like the idea that you could talk about your own company and then plus obviously your clients. I mean, we try to eat our own dog food as well. So I hate that concept, but you understand what I mean.
I know what you mean. And I hate that expression also.
I was like, but we want to walk our talk. That's a better one.
Yeah. I like that one better too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to remind people that you can go to the Michael and Rishon's website, 10xmanagement.com and 10xascend.com. And you can find them both on Twitter at Michael Solomon X and Rishon Bloomberg. All right.
There's one other thing I could say, which is that we created a fun little 10X quiz that people can take to see where they sit on the 10X spectrum. Or they can sort of take it on behalf of their company to see where their company is on the 10X spectrum. And you can take that quiz at gamechangerthebook.com.
Thank you there, Michael.
Perfect.
So, anything else? Any last comments?
Nope. It was really a pleasure. You asked great questions and it's very clear that you're in the throes of what we're talking about on a daily basis.
Literally my own company and also with our clients for sure. Just want to give everybody a heads up about next time. Next Wise Talk will be November 23rd. So right before Thanksgiving at 2 p.m. Pacific with Sonia Lane Gartside. She's the author of Workplace Anxiety, How to Refuel and Re-engage. So again, on our topic of stress and anxiety, we will continue with that. Again, that's November 23rd at 2 p.m. Thanks so much, you guys. Mahalo. And
thank you,
aloha.
Sue. All right.
Thank you so much. Be well, everybody.
Bye now.